The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That music means it's another episode of Just Can't Not, and I'm here with another preview podcast talking about a fantastic event at the Rochester Fringe Festival, the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, happening September 9th to 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. Go to rochesterfringe.com to get tickets for all of the different events, but I have a guest here. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Amanda Andrews. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. So excited to get to talk about the wonderful Rochester Fringe Festival.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your event. So your event is on September 20th, the last day of the Fringe Festival, at 3 o'clock at the Rose Room. But tell me a little bit about what the show is.
Correct. Yes, the last day of the Fringe Festival. And thank you for so beautifully laying out all those specs. I have written a show called Bipolar Coaster. It is a one-woman show about a personal narrative regarding mental health. And there is fabulous original music in it by my collaborator, Kyle Lacey, who will be playing the music on stage for this performance.
Oh, that's fun. I love that. I love that it's actually a live musical part of that performance too, not just to attract. Not that that's a bad thing for a one-person show, but I kind of like that aspect of it.
Thank you. Yes, it's so much of the life force of the show. Most of it is actually music, and the parts that are dialogue, for the most part, have music underneath them. It very much informs the energy and the tone.
Now, when you're talking about that, like, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, you know, bouncy, hey, we're talking about the thing and it has that musical tone underneath it. Is that something that is part of your core, part of your inspiration for something like this, is some of that musical tech background?
That's such a good way to put it. Yes, I feel like just as a picture can evoke certain emotions or memories, I find music has that same power. And as much as I love acting and I love music, I've always felt like doing any type of acting that involves music is almost like cheating a little bit, because it's so easy to just drop into whatever sort of feeling is being visited when there's a certain chord or melody that's played.
Yeah. And I say this in the best possible way. It seems like you have big musical energy.
Oh, thank you.
Like, you know, like it seems like you could be the person in the town, you know, who has to break out into song in any given moment.
Well, thank you. That's such a huge compliment. You know, before I ever started writing my own material, I actually was going after the dream of being in musical theater.
Yeah.
That was when I was in my young 20s, I, you know, took that path of moving to New York City and going to auditions, and nothing of note really progressed from doing that. I did have some interesting opportunities, but luckily one of my mentors who I met on my journey of being in my 20s in New York City was actually a boss of mine. His name was Kevin Abbott. He ran or owned and managed the music venue that I worked at, Joe's Pub. And he would always tell me that, you know, I should write something. And after so many times of hearing it, I finally did. And then when I wrote my first one-woman show, so many more opportunities and flow came into my life. And ever since then, that's kind of where I've directed my energy, because I still had not yet cracked the code of breaking into the musical theater professional world.
Yeah.
All that said, that's a very roundabout way of saying your compliment of me being the musical girl in the town is very elevating to my mood. So thank you.
That's awesome. So I'm kind of wondering, you mentioned that it's something that was brought up to you multiple times, and then you decided to actually do that. What was, you know, what was the difference at that time that you said, yeah, you know what, I am going to do this? What was that? What was that mindset at that time?
That's such a good question. You know, I don't think I can pinpoint an exact moment. I think, like a lot of things in life, in my experience anyway, it's so many edges and so long of resisting that eventually, you know, I usually, whatever it is, whether it's eating too much ice cream, whether it's leaving my apartment 15 minutes late and thinking I'm still going to be on time, it's doing whatever the thing is enough times that I reach a point of, okay, if not now, then when? Like, why am I still clinging on to doing it this way? And so I think it was just after years of doing the same thing and not having any type of exciting or meaningful results, it was just time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the other thing too, is, you know, when you do have a passionate thing that you want to get into, sometimes it's a longing until something calcifies in your head. I don't know, for me, radio was how I learned how to be a social person. And eventually I just like, you know what, I'm just going to start making something and start doing something that makes me feel good about trying. And that trying is the core thing out of all of it. And that step of that leap of actually trying is the thing more than creating the thing is.
I love that. Yes. 1,000%.
Because it changes you, right? After you started doing that, and so that was your first one. Is that I don't know how many times you've done this. So is this like, has this been a multiple thing journey? Like where is this show in the context of your creative process in doing one person shows?
I am so glad you asked, because this is a milestone show. So the first one I did was in 2018. And from there, I have now done 10 different ones.
Oh, my God. And
they all have a mental health theme. And I've sort of honed my specific voice and narrative of the way I tell these stories and the journey I bring people on. And they've always had a musical element, but I've always used songs that we all know and love, or the term for that would be covers. I've always used covers, but arranged them in a way, you know, that goes with the story. And I've gotten to work with some wonderful musicians who've helped me bring that sort of vision to fruition. And for the last three original shows I did, I was collaborating with this brilliant musician named Kyle Lacey. And after our last show together, we decided we would write a show with original music. And so this is my first ever one-woman show with original music. And it's so exciting.
I was going to say, that has to be just like, when you think about starting the journey to now having like, oh, this isn't like part jukebox, part story, part this, part that. This is a complete vision of what this experience is, and that you've had to go through that journey to get to now. It does seem kind of like a special moment.
Thank you. It does feel that way. Yes.
So I'm interested. So when I see the name of the show, it's Bipolar Coaster. So is this part of your journey? Is this part of, you know, just, you know, going into learning about something? How would you describe the show as a personal expression?
Well, the very first show I wrote in 2018, it was called Brilliant But Off. And what
I love that name, by the way.
Thank you.
That's a great name.
I would be lying if I said that figuring out titles is not one of my favorite parts of a process of making a show. And I'd be happy to list some more for you. But Brilliant But Off, it was, I wrote it about an experience I had in my young 20s when I had more or less of a mental breakdown, which most people in their young 20s, in my defense, I think that happens too. Anyway, this is, so I pushed myself to sort of be a little vulnerable and yeah, share some things that I'm like, oh, maybe, I don't know if these people are still going to want to be my friends if I unfiltered share my inner monologue. And it turned out that that was actually what people loved the most. That was what created the momentum. And so with each show, I've pushed myself a little more, dipped the toe in the water, in the pool of vulnerability, if you will, a little more. And so this is the one where I'm just even putting it all out there more. And the arc of this story is about what is a diagnosis and what role does that serve in our lives, and how the way in which we react to it. Do we deny it? Do we take responsibility for it? And the sort of nebulous aspects of mental health, where I think everything is a spectrum, and I think there's a lot of power in owning up to things that might feel embarrassing. So that all may sound very vague, but basically Bipolar Coaster is a show I wrote about my own reckoning with having a mental health diagnosis. I could have just said that. If you want to cut
out
everything I said before, and just,
I think the first part was that is the discussion, right? And I think the reason why I enjoyed, like, the second part is the elevator pitch, right? The second part's the easy one. That's the quick clip version of how do you describe a title like that, right? And that's, there's no weight behind saying that after you get the, like, oh, I've said this 100,000 times, right? There's no weight behind it. But the reckoning, right? That first part. And I think this is also a fascinating moment to be talking about that, because right now more people are being diagnosed with so many more things than has ever happened before, right? People are more aware of the existence of these things and the spectrum of being part of these different communities, different mental health communities, different things like that. Like, I don't know, I got, you know, ADHD diagnosed 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Did I know I had it? 100%, right? It wasn't like, this was not a light switch moment for me. Like, oh, this explains everything. Like, I already knew the way I was broken. It was fine. But people are getting that. Sometimes that validation changes the way they see themselves. And it's not a loaded thing where, oh, now I'm burdened by this. Sometimes it's this huge weight off of people's shoulders. And it seems like this is a fascinating moment to be doing this show, because it is more relevant now because of how present it is.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear that. I think in the vein of what you're saying, the way I see it is, if you feel sick often, say you get nauseous a lot, and then you find out you're allergic to almond butter, then you're able to have some type of control and awareness about your nausea, and you're not completely out of control of what's happening anymore. So yes. And I think that it's understandable why identifying with certain diagnoses or spectrums can intimidate people and make, you know, and make them feel fearful in a way. So
yeah, and I'm kind of when I was reading the description, and this is something that was kind of bouncing in my head a little bit, was, you know, the words used here was a sobering journey of reckoning with the responsibilities of living with bipolar disorder. Now, that was the word used. Now, when you're thinking about reckoning versus reconciling yourself with the experience of living with it, do you think those are different? Because to me, that lives in a different world, right? Because reckoning with it, you know, has a different weight than reconciling yourself with. There's an acceptance versus like trying to work through it. Like, do you think you're at the point where you're reconciled with it, or that you're still reckoning with it?
I mean, I think by choice, I am continuously reckoning with becoming a more aware human.
Yeah.
And specifically with the mental health, I strongly believe that the other part of having the awareness and having enough compassion for ourselves to own whatever it is we identify with, the other side of that is taking accountability for our behaviors in the world. And it's not an excuse. It's not, you know, I feel like while I'm thrilled about the amplification of mental health in the current day, as you were sort of mentioning, I've noticed this pattern where people will say, oh, sorry, I did that. I'm ADD. Or sorry, I did. Sorry, that was my mania. Just, you know, causing a destroyer fest. And I think it's so the opposite. It's the moment we become aware, the moment we can take responsibility. And that's why I just feel like there's always more awareness to be had in regard to that. So did that answer the question?
No, absolutely. No, and it was a bit of a vague question, because it's always a journey, right? And that, you know, the thing you mentioned along the way was, you know, yeah, I think we're always the hardest on ourselves. We're the hardest on ourselves for our failures, for our you know, for the way we're perceiving, the way we are perceived, right? Mm. Which is, you know, it's an abstraction of how people actually see us. But I think we're always in our own heads about those things. And especially if you're dealing with a condition or other things. And I love that this is an opportunity to, you know, express that, you know, to really, you know, go through and formulate a performance around that. So what I kind of want to end off with is, when you're doing this for the 10th time, also, how cool that this is the 10th time.
Thank you. But new. Show is different. Each show is a completely new script.
Yeah. So when you're creating a show for the 10th time, how is the process different now than the first time or the second time? How do you go through the process of creating something like this now the 10th time?
Well, for one, I always say that the reason I've done so many now is because at the end of each one, I have learned so much. And so my thought is, well, I must do another one because now I know how I can make it so much better. But it's really quite interesting because there's usually just a seed idea that, whether it's a song, in some of these past ones with covers, I'd think of a song I knew and say, oh my gosh, this will be a moment in this show. And then it kind of builds out from there. Or sometimes it's a concept of a story or a dialogue. But this time it's interesting because the seed idea is actually not a part of this show, Bipolar Coaster, at all. And so that's really interesting, but it's what everything that the show is came from, but the actual concept is not included in the show anymore.
I love that. Cause that spark, I like the part that seems like a very mature creative thought, right? That the spark doesn't have to be the core of the show, that it can bounce a little bit differently, that, you know, that, oh, yes, that was the spark, and I can push that to the side and love it for being the thing that inspired the thing, instead of the spark has to be the thing.
Yes, absolutely. When the second that we are not open to everything completely changing is the second that we cut ourselves off from the, you know, divine creative forces that want to work with us.
Yes, and if you want to see the divine creative forces working in person, you should definitely go to Bipolar Coaster on September 20th at 3:00 at the Rose Room. You can get your tickets for that show on rochesterfringe.com. Is there anything else that people need to know before they buy their tickets? I mean, one, they should be, but two, anything else they need to know?
I would just say, please continue listening to this fabulous podcast. Chris, it was such a joy getting to talk to you, and thank you for asking me questions that were so fun to answer.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate everybody listening to this episode of Just Can't Not. We'll be back with more Rochester Fringe previews very soon.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Ride the Bipolar Coaster. All right.
The Level Up Coffee Podcast is now dialed in.
We love coffee and stay connected to every development in the industry, both here in Rochester and worldwide, to bring you our unique perspective on the ever-changing world of coffee.
We're doing regular tastings, reporting on our travels, and trying to hold back tirades about the forces that make the coffee supply chain a neo-colonial mess. Join us on the Lunchador Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts, and stay
dialed in.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Cologne.
And Quanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every First Friday. And
on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network.